Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I'm disappointed that President Trump has chosen to hold a campaign rally as our nation is still healing from the tragic events in Charlottesville. If President Trump is coming to Phoenix to announce a pardon for former Sheriff Joe Arpaio, then it'll be clear that his true intent is to inflame emotions and further divide our nation.
It's not my desire or mission to tear down any monuments or memorials. We have a public process for this.
I think there's blame on both sides. What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt?
He has denounced the Ku Klux Klan and the neo-Nazis. He has done it over and over, and David Duke. And you people just keep on reporting that he hasn't done it.
And here with me to discuss the fallout from the violence in Charlottesville, the future of Arizona's Confederate monuments, and President Trump's visit to Phoenix next week are Matthew Benson. He's a director at the firm Veritas and also served as communications director for former Governor Jan Brewer. Also joined by Mario Diaz, president of Mario E. Diaz and Associates. He also served as a deputy chief of staff for former Governor Janet Napolitano. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with Charlottesville. And I'm wondering, I want to ask both of you, would we still be talking about this almost a week after the horrible incident in Virginia were it not for the kind of response that we heard from the administration?
Well, yeah, I think we would still be talking about it because, you know, this was the largest white supremacist rally in the United States in like 20 years. And the fact that somebody was killed in the counter protest, and there were two law enforcement members that were killed in the response as well. So we would still be talking about it, but there is no doubt that the president's ham-handed response to this situation, threw a lot of gas on the fire, so to speak.
And Mario, we heard this morning that White House strategist Steve Bannon is apparently out of his position there. How much of the president's response and sort of the fallout from that do you think might have led to that?
Well, there's a perception that Mr. Bannon has been the instigator, the author of the type of language that our president has been voicing. And so we have to find some good news, and I hope this is some good news, that there's a new beginning here. There's a pivot in terms of emotions and language that the president is using.
Matt made reference to the fact that this was the largest white supremacist gathering in many, many years. And yeah, I'm wondering sort of how you both worked for governors, you've worked in government. How do you try to make sure that people, even people with views that are frankly despicable, how can they, where is the role for them to be able to express their views if that is something that a government decides is important versus the right of people to oppose them and making sure that what happened in Charlottesville, the violence, doesn't happen elsewhere?
Well, look, I'm a First Amendment purist, okay? So I believe that groups, even those that have despicable views like the KKK and associated entities, they have a right under the First Amendment to speak. And if they want to have a rally or get together and, march around with tiki torches, I believe they should be able to do that, okay? I also believe that you should be able to come out and protest against that and speak equally and point out how despicable their beliefs are. And from a government perspective, you just want to provide both their space to convene and try to keep them separate. And I think that is where law enforcement really failed in Charlottesville because they took very much a hands-off approach, and they allowed the two groups to really engage in sort of a rolling street fight for hours as opposed to cordoning off. One has their space over here, the other can be on the other side, and they can each speak but not engage in this kind of civil unrest that we saw in Charlottesville.
Is it possible, do you think, in this current climate to keep those two disparate groups apart? I mean, yes, I guess law enforcement could do more than what they did in Charlottesville, but at the end of the day, Mario, do you think those two groups are wanting to stay separate?
Look, that's the function of First Amendment. You go here, you go here, you speak. But it's the symbolism that really, I think, got to a lot of people against the white supremacists, carrying the swastika, the chants that they were putting out, the references to the swastika, 6 million individuals were killed around the world. You know, there's a fine line. We don't allow certain items into baseball stadiums. You can't bring your cooler. You know, when you're going to have a rally like this, having a swastika and the kind of language that they were chanting really rubs the wrong way here, and it led to what we have now.
How much do you think that what happened in Charlottesville was a result of the kind of climate we're in, and how much do you think it contributed to the kind of climate that we're in?
Look, there is no doubt that words matter, and the tone that had been set during the campaign and that has been progressing through the last 8 months from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue has not contributed to calmness. But at the end of the day, we have to govern, right? Elected officials have to govern, and all this that we're going through is just masking the reality, which is the country is not moving forward. Legislatively, nothing has happened the last 6-7 months, and it's just hurting people. All this discussion that we're having here doesn't feed families. It doesn't provide jobs. It just holds this country back.
Yeah, Matt, I guess maybe the question that Mario is raising is what does all of this do to the president's legislative agenda? What does it do to members of Congress in either party willingness to work with him or to, you know, see his priorities as their priorities?
Yeah, well, it clearly paralyzes the president's legislative agenda. I mean, we've just had a hell of a infrastructure week here, right? It was infrastructure week, right? You aware of that?
Yeah.
Who knew, right?
Yeah. Right.
So, I
guess a lot of people didn't get the memo on that.
Yeah, and that's the point. There is very little moving forward in terms of health care, tax reform, or infrastructure, or the other key priorities that that the president and that his party have put forth. So in that regard, I mean, it's paralyzing to the administration and to the Republican leadership in Washington generally.
Do you think that is a permanent paralysis, or do you think that at some point we'll get over that and legislation and priorities will start moving again?
Well, it's not permanent, except in that, you know, what you're seeing this week is a concern that this president is now damaged in a way that is beyond repair. You are seeing a lot of Republicans talking publicly and privately that this president has lost the moral high ground. He has no moral authority to govern. And once you've lost that, getting that back is tremendously difficult. I mean, God forbid we have some kind of a black swan national tragedy that hits at this point in our nation's history, because does anyone among us believe that this president has the kind of moral imperative necessary to unite the country and lead a response?
Now, Matt, you mentioned that a lot of politicians of both parties have been coming out and either publicly or privately talking about that they don't think the president has handled it well. We heard earlier from one who was defending the president, your former boss, Governor Brewer. Did it surprise you that she came out so strongly in support of the president's response?
I wasn't surprised, because we have seen her be loyal to Donald Trump in the past. Even when the rest of his so-called friends made themselves scarce. So this is not new. There were multiple stories this week that, you know, news programs that sought 30, 40, and 50 different Republicans to appear as guests to speak on, you know, in defense of the president, and none of them would. And Jan Brewer did. I think it puts her in a tremendously difficult spot to try to defend some of the statements that he'd made, but there she was.
Mario, I want to ask you about something else that has sort of come from the fallout from what happened in Charlottesville, and that is the fate of Confederate monuments, both here and elsewhere. There are a handful of them in Arizona. I'm wondering to you, like, what is the symbolism of either keeping them or removing them to the state of Arizona and all the people who live here?
I think more than anyone in this state, I know much about monuments and names being changed from Squaw Peak to Paestewa Peak.
Part of your time with the
part
then
of my
Governor
time
Napolitano.
With Napolitano from changing that name, which our Native American friends and many others found offensive, naming it after a soldier who died in battle. Symbols matter. It's the process for which one wishes to remove certain symbols and names, historical markers. I'm concerned that overnight, bringing down monuments overnight, is not the way to go. We need to work within the system and see where it goes and have a healthy debate about them.
Do you think these are the kinds of monuments that deserve to be up? Should they be taken down? Should they be allowed to stay?
You know, Mark, I have 5 minutes with you this morning, and here's the issue, is that we're discussing issues about monuments. It's fine. It's important. But there's so many more issues that we should be discussing about how are we going to move our country forward? How do we make this country again the bright light, right, that the world saw us once before? And thank goodness for the women and men that work for government that are watching our homeland, because this is the time of vulnerability that could be perceived from people that are not our friends from abroad. We have to be very vigilant during this time. And I'm concerned that all this smoke screens, important issues for many, it could hurt our country.
We'll come back to this in just a moment. Time for a short break. You're listening to the Friday Newscap on the show. Back in just a minute. Good morning. It's the show on 91.5 and KJZZ.org. I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix. This is the Friday Newscap. I'm joined in studio by Mario Diaz and Matthew Benson. And we've been talking about some of the fallout from the violence in Charlottesville and some of the Confederate monuments. And Matt, before we move on, I want to ask you about some of the vandalism that has taken place on some of the monuments in Arizona. I'm wondering how you think that moves the conversation. Does it move the conversation? Does it affect public opinion at all?
Well, it certainly doesn't move the conversation in a helpful way. And for the groups that are engaging in that kind of, you know, in the dark of night vandalism, I don't think it's helpful to their side. I don't think it draws public support to their effort among people who, you know, may be of open mind on this issue. I think when they see that, you know, state monuments and markers are being vandalized and destroyed outside the public process, I think it's counterproductive to what they're trying to achieve.
So next week is kind of a big week, at least early in the week in Phoenix. A lot of attention will be here as President Trump is planning a campaign rally for the Phoenix Convention Center. Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton has asked for the president to at least postpone it, if not cancel it outright, given sort of everything that's happened. Matt, is that a realistic thing to ask? I mean, this thing's going on, right?
Yeah, this is happening. And no, it's not a realistic request. I mean, look, I understand politics are being played here. And so if you're the mayor, then, you know, you have to come out and you know, push back against President Trump and if not tell him to stay away, at least tell him don't come right now. So I understand that. But look, it's ludicrous to say that we need to let some buffer of time pass before the president can leave the White House and go out into the country and talk to the people. So I expect he'll be here Tuesday. And frankly, I don't expect any great uprising or unrest in reaction to that. I think there'll be protests, and there have been in the past. And I think that Phoenix law enforcement and the people of Phoenix are going to acquit themselves well here.
Mario, is there anything that the president could say either before he gets here or while he is speaking here that would, for you, make you feel a little bit better about where we are or make you feel a little bit better about his response to everything that's been going on recently?
I don't think there's anything he can say. I think this is a matter of time has to heal. This should be a wake-up call that we need a strong checks and balance system within our government, and the House of Congress is so important, and it should be a wake-up call to voters that members of Congress do matter for checks and balances within our system.
So let's talk about members of Congress, because there has been some speculation that perhaps one of the reasons that President Trump is coming here is to throw his support behind a primary challenger to Senator Jeff Flake. Kelly Ward is in the race, and he tweeted something positive about her this week. But there have been rumors that maybe Jeff DeWitt or Robert Graham or someone else even may be getting into the race. Matt, do you think that is in the offing, some kind of political endorsement or throw of support from the president on Tuesday?
You know, that's the big question, and I don't think anybody knows the answer to that. Look, I don't expect it, frankly, at this point. I think that they are still the flake opposition is still utterly disorganized in terms of who's going to run against him and whether it's going to be Kelly Ward or whether it's going to be a bigger ticket candidate. We have heard about Jeff DeWitt considering this race for literally 6 months. He has not gotten in, which I take to mean he's not getting in. You saw President Trump's tweet, as usual, sort of out of the blue. And following that, a lot of talk that it caught by surprise a lot of his White House aides who are looking for somebody more substantial than Kelly Ward to get into the race. So, you know, this is, once again, it's just more, I think the tweet is indicative of nothing. And I don't expect a big grand display on Tuesday with a primary challenger standing arm in arm with the president.
Mario, what do you think?
Yeah, look, what I don't want to see from the Democrat side is getting into the sandbox and continuing to play this game of pointing fingers and talking down to each other. I really want to see a plan of action from both sides, getting together and saying, Mr. President, while you're busy doing what you need to do, we're going to put plans together, because it's obvious that the White House just doesn't have their act together right now. Maybe in the future they will. But for the moment, we can't let time pass. R's and D's need to get together and put plans together to move the country forward.
Do you expect to see some kind of political statement from the president with relation to the U.S. Senate race here?
I wouldn't doubt it. If it's not on his teleprompter, it's on his mind, and I have a feeling that it will come out.
Something else that we learned about recently that has been on the president's mind is potentially pardoning former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio. There's also speculation. There's a lot of speculation about what the president might be doing on Tuesday here. But there's been speculation that maybe he'll be coming here to formally announce a pardon for Arpaio. Mario, do you think is that a possibility?
Anything's a possibility. Anything is a possibility. And this could be on the table. I would not take it off the table.
What would that mean for this community, do you think?
Well, for the Latino community, I believe that justice has been served from the viewpoint of many people. What happens now is just a matter of time and what the president decides to do. But I think so much energy has been spent on seeing that the verdict comes out as guilty. It did. And I think people are ready to move forward.
And I really agree with Mario on that. The guilty verdict was what mattered here. Look, I don't think Sheriff Joe was going to serve jail time or prison time anyway. So the guilty verdict came in, and the rest of this, frankly, I think is going to be long forgotten, whether he's pardoned or not. His political obituary is going to read that he was convicted. He was guilty.
Well, it's interesting, though, Mario, because there have been a lot of Hispanic and Latino activists who have said, yes, he is guilty, but a pardon still sends the wrong message. It's still kind of a slap in the face. It sounds like, in some respect at least, you don't necessarily buy into that.
Well, I'm not speaking for the entire community,
sure.
as of course you're not alluding to, but in my opinion, a guilty verdict is a guilty verdict. And so let's turn the page and, you know, I continue to be an optimist and let's just move forward, because our country is still young. We're still learning. There's a lot to do to make life better for Americans.
We have just about a minute left, and I want to touch on something that we talked about a little earlier on the show, which happened yesterday, which is the news that the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Maricopa County Stadium District will be heading to arbitration over their dispute over Chase Field. There has been a lot of talk that maybe the D-backs are looking for a new place to play if Chase Field is not brought up to standard. Matt, do you think there's any chance that the D-backs leave Chase Field?
Oh, I think there's absolutely a chance, and that seems to be the direction in which they want to head. I am hopeful, frankly, as a baseball fan, that arbitration means these two sides can come together, can come to the same table, and try to reach out something that works for both sides. Because what we've seen over the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 months is just each taking shots at one another, often through the media. So I'm hopeful that this is a positive step. But again, I mean, there are literally hundreds of millions of dollars at stake here, so that remains to be seen.
Do you think this process will reduce, to use a baseball analogy, the chin music that both sides have been using on each other?
Well, that's the hope, certainly. I mean, look, the D-backs leaving Chase Field is a major blow to Phoenix and to downtown Phoenix and, frankly, to the community. The baseball team should be playing in downtown Phoenix. I believe that, I mean, the Coyotes leaving downtown Phoenix was a mistake. You want your major sports teams, the major attractions, to be in the city core, and that's downtown Phoenix.
Mario, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I hope they stay. It's a draw not only for Arizona, but to our friends from Mexico, and so it builds that bond and that trust. And at the end of the day, getting along with people is spending time with people and trusting each other.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. That was Mario Diaz, president of Mario E. Diaz and Associates, also joined in studio by Matthew Benson, a director at the firm Veritas. Guys, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you're listening to the show.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.